We're going to be reading from the book of Daniel today, going to chapter 6, please. It pleased Darius to appoint 120 satraps to rule throughout the kingdom, with three administrators over them, one of whom was Daniel. The satraps were made accountable to them so that the king might not suffer loss. Now Daniel so distinguished himself among the administrators and the satraps by his exceptional qualities that the king planned to set him over the whole kingdom. At this, the administrators and the satraps tried to find grounds for charges against Daniel in his conduct of governmental affairs, but they were unable to do so. They could find no corruption in him because he was trustworthy and neither corrupt nor negligent. Finally, these men said, "We will never find any basis for charges against this man Daniel unless it has something to do with the law of his God." So these administrators and the satraps went as a group to the king and said, "May King Darius live forever. The royal administrators, prefects, satraps, advisors and governors have all agreed that the king should issue an edict and enforce the decree that anyone who prays to any god or human being during the next 30 days, except to you, your majesty, shall be thrown into the lion's den. Now, your majesty, issue the decree and put it in writing so that it cannot be altered, in accordance with the law of the Medes and Persians, which cannot be repealed." So King Darius put the decree into writing. Now when Daniel learned that the decree had been published, he went home to his upstairs room where the windows opened toward Jerusalem. Three times a day he got down on his knees and prayed, giving thanks to his God, just as he had done before. Then these men went as a group and found Daniel praying and asking God for help. So they went to the king and spoke to him about his royal decree. "Did you not publish a decree that during the next 30 days... anyone who prays to any god or human being except to you, your majesty, would be thrown into the lion's den?" The king answered, "The decree stands in accordance with the law of the Medes and Persians, which cannot be repealed." Then they said to the king, "Daniel, who was one of the exiles from Judah, pays no attention to you, your majesty, or to the decree you put into writing. He still prays three times a day." When the king heard this, he was greatly distressed. He was determined to rescue Daniel and made every effort until sundown to save him. Then the men went as a group to King Darius and said to him, "Remember, your majesty, that according to the law of the Medes and Persians, no decree or edict that the king issues can be changed." So the king gave the order, and they brought Daniel and they threw him into the lion's den. The king said to Daniel, "May your God, whom you serve continually, rescue you." A stone was brought and placed over the mouth of the den, and the king sealed it with his own signet ring and with the rings of his nobles so that Daniel's situation might not be changed. Then the king returned to his palace and spent the night without eating and without any entertainment being brought to him, and he could not sleep. At the first light of dawn, the king got up and hurried to the lion's den. When he came near the den, he called to Daniel in an anguished voice, "Daniel, servant of the living God, has your God, whom you serve continually, been able to rescue you from the lions?" Daniel answered, "May the king live forever. My God sent his angel and he shut the mouths of the lions. They have not hurt me because I was found innocent in his sight. Nor have I ever done any wrong before you, your majesty." The king was overjoyed and gave orders to lift Daniel out of the den. And when Daniel was lifted from the den, no wound was found on him because he had trusted in his God. At the king's command, the men who had falsely accused Daniel were brought and thrown into the lion's den, along with their wives and children. And before they reached the floor of the den, the lions overpowered them and crushed all their bones. Then King Darius wrote to all the nations and peoples of every language in all the earth, "May you prosper greatly. I issue a decree that in every part of my kingdom people must fear and reverence the God of Daniel. For he is the living God and he endures forever. His kingdom will not be destroyed. His dominion will never end. He rescues and he saves. He performs signs and wonders in the heavens and on the earth. He has rescued Daniel from the power of the lions." So Daniel prospered during the reign of Darius and the reign of Cyrus the Persian.
Well, I want to begin here this morning by talking to you about something controversial, and that is this. cracking your knuckles. It is controversial, isn't it? Some people love it, some people hate it. Some members of my family are in the love camp, and they have even tried to evangelize me to win me over to their camp. But so far I have resisted. And I confess that at one point I even pulled out that well-worn argument, it will give you arthritis. But apparently, not so. There was a doctor by the name of Donald Unger in California, and he, like some of my children, suffered under parents that did not appreciate the goodness of knuckle cracking. And so he set about an experiment where over the course of 50 years, he, in his left hand, cracked his knuckles at least twice a day, and in his right hand, he never once cracked his knuckles. And in 1998, he published a journal noting that there was no difference in the development of arthritis in both of his hands, and that therefore it was a myth. So there you have it. Not a good argument against knuckle cracking. Now, as much as I don't share with Dr. Unger his passion for cracking knuckles, you do have to hand it to him that that guy was a true disciple of his cause, was he not? He was in it for the long haul. Now today in Daniel chapter 6, I want us to think about what it looks like to be a lifelong disciple of Jesus. Okay, often we mention in our vision, don't we? We've done it again today already. Our prayer is to see a flood of lifelong disciples on the north edge of Brisbane and beyond. And there's a word in there that I think is really helpful among other things, and that's that word lifelong. We want to be lifelong disciples. And as we head into Daniel chapter 6, what we have here is someone who's been a lifelong disciple. Okay, here in this chapter, Daniel is now under the rule of the Medes and the Persians. It's around 70 years since Daniel arrived in the land of Babylon. And so what is clear here is that, I mean, Daniel must be well into at least his 80s. Daniel is an old man. And yet, as an old man, what you have here is a guy who, you've got to say, is still following the Lord with the same kind of resolve as he had all of those years ago. This, for Daniel, has been a matter of lifelong discipleship. You know, it's been a matter of lifelong discipleship even while he's been in exile, even while he's felt like a foreigner for so many years, and he knows that this isn't his home. He's just continued to take one step forward after another in pursuit of his king. It's lifelong discipleship. And so as we consider this passage, I want us to ask the question, what does it look like to be a lifelong disciple of our King above? Firstly, serve well. Okay, this has been one of the themes of Daniel, hasn't it? Although Daniel is in a foreign land and he's feeling, you know, dislocated, and he doesn't have the same worldview as others, and sometimes he and his friends are treated badly, yet even so, to the extent that he's able to serve, he's going to serve well. Remember, he's already, you know, helped out Nebuchadnezzar with the interpretation of his dreams. He made sure that those astrologers and magicians weren't executed. He was sad when he heard that Nebuchadnezzar was going to be humbled. Daniel has been serving well in Babylon. And Daniel does this because, I mean, that's what his God had commanded. In Jeremiah 29, God had given instructions for when his people were taken into a foreign land. We've touched on this previously, and he told them that when they go into exile, they should seek the peace and prosperity of the city to which I've carried you into exile, and pray to the Lord for it, because if it prospers, you too will prosper. The attitude that they were to have was to seek the good of the city and to pray for it. And it's what we have seen so far in Daniel. It's what we see again in this chapter. Okay, notice here that Daniel is seeking the good of the city. Daniel, we're told in verses 1 through to 4, has risen to be one of three administrators over the whole kingdom. And actually, you know, Darius, the king, he's even wanting to make him administrator over all of it. Darius has seen in Daniel that he's not a guy who's given to corruption. He is a guy who is trustworthy. And who else would you want over your whole kingdom? This was just everyday discipleship for Daniel. He'd been pursuing the good of the city, and that had been shining through. Everyday discipleship. And you know, that should be the case for us too. Okay, I was chatting with someone after church just last week, and they shared with me the story of that well-known pastor, Martin Luther from Christian history, and the story goes that apparently once Luther was approached by a working man who they just wanted to know, you know, how can I serve Jesus? This guy was apparently, you know, he seemed quite anxious, concerned to know, you know, how can I be serving Jesus? And Luther asked him the question, well, what's your work right now? He replied, I'm a shoemaker. And much to this guy's surprise, Luther simply responded, then make a good shoe and sell it at a fair price. Okay, he's saying, serve well in the arena that you are in. And I think that's the kind of thing that's happening here in Daniel 6. Daniel is intent on serving well where he is. And that's an important part of our witness to the world. I think of Peter, who describes who describes Jesus' followers as exiles in his first letter, and his instruction to them as to how they should live in the world as exiles is this. He says, live such good lives among the pagans that though they accuse you of wrongdoing, they may see your good deeds and glorify God on the day he visits us. He's saying, hey, there's something to be said for just your consistent, faithful, plodding, ordinary, good life. Don't neglect that. Don't undervalue that. You know, sometimes I think we can feel like unless we've done something absolutely spectacular for Jesus, we've become a missionary to a foreign land, or we've served in an orphanage or something like this, we've failed. No, the majority of us are going to live quite ordinary lives, and that's okay. Just seek to serve your community well where you are, and seek to serve God well where you are. Daniel sought the good of the city. And as part of that, he prayed. Remember, that was part of what the Lord had called the people to while they were in exile, wasn't it? Seek the peace of the city and pray for it. But part of the call there was to be a people of prayer, to keep on turning their eyes to the true king who is above, even while they are under foreign kings, to be praying. And as they were praying, yes, certainly they would be praying for others of God's people, but also they needed to be praying even for this city that was right in front of them. They needed to be a people of prayer. And it's what we see in Daniel, isn't it? In fact, I mean, it was his commitment to prayer that got him into so much trouble. As we see here in this section, some of the governors of the kingdom, they are jealous of Daniel, and they try to persuade King Darius that you can only pray to him for the next 30 days. And that's what Darius does, and Daniel ignores it. And we're told in verse 10, this says, now when Daniel learned that the decree had been published, he went home to his upstairs room where the windows opened toward Jerusalem. Three times a day he got down on his knees and prayed, giving thanks to his God, just as he had done before. Okay, notice here that this was part of Daniel's ongoing habit. And Daniel was determined now to continue in this regular practice of prayer. It was part of his ongoing, part of his resolute discipleship to the true king. And as I say, this was also a way that he was serving the people where he was. It's reasonable to think, because of the Jeremiah passage, that part of what's going on here is prayer for the city. I think that's quite impressive, isn't it? I mean, this is the nation that has taken them captive, isn't it? But they were still going to pray for them. They'd been still called to do that. I think of Jesus when he instructs us to love our enemies and to pray for those who persecute us, that we may be children of our Father in heaven. That's the kind of thing that God's people in exile have been called to. And it's part of serving well. Now, it's important as we think of service that we don't only think of those practical things that we, as important as they are, you know, that we don't only think of how we serve in our workplace or how we practically care for people and so on. It's important that we also have a view of prayer, that we're praying for specific people in our lives that we want to see come to know Jesus. And that we see that as a genuine way of serving them, that we believe that actually God is doing something through the prayers of his people. He has power to help people. And so we're taking them to God. We see this as part of our service to them. And so as lifelong disciples of our King above, we need to be serving well, don't we? We have a genuinely loving attitude toward people. We seek the good of the city. We've got non-Christian friends on our prayer list and we're bringing them to God regularly. We serve well. And then also, we seek to be faithful to the end. And this is where we may experience something of the pain of being a disciple of Jesus. Because though we may love people and pray for them and seek their good, I mean, it's not a guarantee, is it, that they will always respond well to us. We're going to face times where staying obedient to God sets us in opposition to the world around us. And that's a difficult place to be. And it's the place that Daniel was in here. We mentioned moments ago the trap that the jealous governor set in place. They manipulate Darius into making a law that requires prayer to him for 30 days. And of course, Daniel refuses. He refuses, no doubt, because of the first commandment. You shall have no other gods before me. So he just can't go along with that. And you know, what I find so striking here is just how completely unwavering Daniel is. I mean, check out verse 10 again. Now, when Daniel learned that the decree had been published, okay, this decree to pray to no one except Darius. When Daniel learned of that decree, what's his first response? He went home to his upstairs room where the windows opened toward Jerusalem, and three times a day he got down on his knees and prayed to his God. That's what he did. It's remarkable, isn't it? It's so decisive. Daniel understands, no questions asked, that there's just a time to stand firm. Now, certainly, if you were with us back when we looked at Daniel 1, you might remember that we talked about that not everything is black and white. Some things require wisdom. Daniel, no doubt, would have preferred not to have the Babylonian name, not to have the Babylonian education and so on, but some things he went along with. But there are places where we've got to exercise judgment. But what we can't do is make a judgment call on whether or not we're going to obey God in something that is clearly there in his word. If it's clear in God's word, we must obey it. Daniel grasped that. And so when Daniel heard of the decree to pray to Darius, he went up and he prayed to Yahweh, his God. He was faithful. And you know, what I'm wanting you to notice here overall is the pattern of Daniel's life. OK, Okay, here is one who is a testament to lifelong discipleship. Back when he was a youth, Daniel had been dragged away to Babylon. Probably he was a teenager, perhaps 15, something like that. And he's brought into the courts of power, and he had to just so quickly learn how to make wise decisions. He grew up so quickly and where to draw the line and so on. And he did that so remarkably, didn't he? He was faithful. And now here he is, maybe at the age of 85. And like so many times before in his life, he's tested again and he is faithful again. How encouraging is that to see God sustaining his child for a life of faithfulness to him? Undoubtedly, with many failures in there along the way as well. But there's this whole life commitment here to the Lord that we can see. From being young right to being old, he's on the side of the King above. So let me take a moment here to talk to those who are young and then to talk to those who are older. You know, I want to say to you, if you're a young person here, maybe you're even a teenager here, as Daniel was when he headed to Babylon, I want to say to you, you can be a loyal follower of Jesus right now. Don't let the world determine who you're going to be as a young person. Don't let the world shape you into its mold, okay? Be ready to actually go against the flow. You can be a godly, faithful, wise young person and have a powerful impact for Jesus right now. You know, for me, and I'm sure for many others, some of my strongest growth moments in Jesus was when I was young. Certainly God has done a deep work in me at other times too, and I admit I still have a long way to go. I'm very conscious of that. But God did something in me when I was young. And what I'm wanting to say to you is don't wait till you say 30 before you're resolute for following Jesus. Start now. And let me say, by the way, that I mean, from what I've seen of the young people here, I'm so impressed that there are so many that are doing exactly that. Many people openly for Christ, serving him, serving others, and it's just super encouraging to me. Because what if the imprint that Jesus is making in your life right now is going to be helping you for some kind of parallel circumstance even 70 years on from now? If you're young, this is the time to be digging down deep into faithfulness to Jesus. And, you know, can I say to you, if you feel like, you know, maybe you're more at the other end of things, maybe you're not, you know, 85, but maybe you just feel like you're kind of getting toward that end of life, can I say that this is also a time to be digging down deep into faithfulness to Jesus? You know, who would have thought that Daniel might face what some have described as probably the toughest test of his life at the age of 85? And who would have thought that God would use an 85-year-old to prompt the most powerful man in the world at that time to declare the God of the Bible to the world at that time, as he does at the end of this chapter? God is able to do something with both the morning and the evening of your life. You know, I remember a wonderful older couple in the church that I pastored down in Sydney, Bill and Sue. And for them, the greatest difficulty they were facing was Sue's cancer. Third, what was called smoldering multiple myeloma. And what was so difficult for them was just that it went on for so long. I mean, I literally lost track of the number of years that she was battling it. It was at least 10 years. And I definitely lost track of the number of treatments that she had had. So many rounds of chemotherapy, so many rounds of radiotherapy and other treatments. And each time she had to endure everything that that does to your body. It was very difficult. And at one level, you might think, you know, what difference can a couple of old people make, one with terminal cancer, to others? But I tell you what, they made a difference to many people and they made a difference to me. And it was just, it was nothing spectacular. It was nothing spectacular at all. They were just faithful. They were just thankful even in their circumstances. They trusted in God's promises. I remember they just always used to quote to me Nahum 1 verse 7. The Lord is good. He is a stronghold in the day of trouble and he knows those who take refuge in him. And I remember just thinking at a moment like that, you know what? I want to be like those guys when I get old. That's what I want to be like. They're just faithful to Christ right to the end. And again, we have some wonderful examples of godly older Christians in our church as well. But you know, the point that I'm trying to make is whether you're young, whether you're old, or whether perhaps you're somewhere in between, whatever stage you are at, Jesus calls us to faithfulness in the here and in the now. Be faithful even to the point of death, Jesus says in Revelation 2, and I will give your life as your victor's crown. We're to be faithful to the end. And finally, as you and I seek to be lifelong disciples of our King above, we're to look to our rescuer. Okay, the message of Daniel 6 is that though Daniel is an exile in a foreign land, yet Daniel has a rescuer. Yes, Daniel is thrown to the lions, as we know, but the next day the king comes and he comes to the den and he calls out in verse 19, Daniel, has your God been able to rescue you from the lions? And Daniel tells him, yes, God sent an angel who shut the mouth of the lions. And Daniel is rescued. We're told in verse 23 that Daniel was delivered because he trusted in his God. Daniel had been looking to his rescuer. And that's the kind of outlook that we need if we're going to serve well in a foreign land. And if we're going to be faithful, right, to the end. We need to believe that whatever happens, we have a rescuer. It's not that we believe that, you know, we'll never go through hard times, but we know that God is on the throne and that what is most important in life and in death is secure in him. And so we're looking to him. This is how we're able to keep calm as we face the challenges of life. It's how, you know, Daniel could hear the decree and just go up and pray to his God. Because we know we have a rescuer. Now, of course, the way that God rescues us is through Jesus, isn't it? And actually here in Daniel 6, you'll notice that Daniel himself even points us forward to Jesus. Okay, you might have noticed a number of similarities here between Daniel's story and Jesus' story. And they're worth thinking through. Okay, just as Daniel is sentenced to death, though he is innocent of wrongdoing, but there's, you know, people manipulating things in the background. So Jesus is sentenced to death, though he is innocent of wrongdoing. And just as a stone is laid over the lion's den in verse 17, which is Daniel's tomb, so a stone is rolled over Jesus' tomb. And just as Daniel is effectively acquitted by God and thus raised from the dead, as it were, brought out of the tomb. So Jesus is ultimately acquitted by God and thus raised from the dead. There's these kind of foreshadowings here of Jesus. Only the great difference between Daniel and Jesus is that in the tomb, Jesus really was dead. In the tomb, Jesus really did get torn to pieces by those lions, as it were. He was torn to pieces, not for his sin, but for ours. And he was released from the tomb only because he had done enough to rescue us from our sin and to set us free. See, in Daniel 6, in one sense, what you have here is a guy, Daniel, who needs rescuing. But in another sense, what Daniel does is he points us forward to the great rescuer, the one who rescues us from the greatest threat that we have, our own sin. You know, none of us have always been faithful to our God, have we? In fact, we're so conscious that we fail often. And none of us have always served the world around us as we ought. We are conscious of our own self-centeredness. But Jesus has always been faithful. Jesus has always served the world around him, even his enemies. He did so all the way up until his final breath. And so it's in Jesus that we find the truly innocent one, and we need to look to him. We look to him, yes, as our example, but we look to him also as our rescuer from the devastation and the harm that comes because of our sin. See, this is what it looks like ultimately to be a lifelong disciple of our King. We look to our rescuer. We look to Jesus. Because it's only in Jesus that we are going to be able to find the one who we truly are able to imitate. And it's only in Jesus that we are going to find the one who releases us from the burden of the many times that we fail along the way. And you just can't keep on going along that path without knowing that ongoing experience of his forgiveness. You know, you might want to serve well in our world, and you may want to be faithful to the end. But the rocket fuel for that, the rocket fuel that will propel you forward, is Christ and what he has done for us. As Paul said in Galatians chapter 2, "The life I now live, I live by faith in the Son of God, who loved me and gave himself for me." That's what's going to continue to propel us forward in lifelong discipleship. That's what's going to keep us going till our hairs are grey, until our body gives way. We live by faith in the Son of God who loved us and gave his life for us. Let's pray together. Yes, Father in heaven, thank you for Jesus. Thank you for our rescuer. Thank you for the way that he has served so faithfully, that he has loved even his enemies. Thank you for the way that he has been faithful. He was faithful all the way to the cross. And Lord, help us to imitate him and help us to look to him as our rescuer. We feel our sin, we feel our failings, but we thank you for the one who rescues us, our Lord Jesus Christ. And we praise you for him in Jesus' name. Amen.